Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of The Only Podcast. I'm your co-host, Austin Smith, joined as always by your other co-host, John Kirby. You can find us on Twitter at ACSmith06 and at John_Kirby. And as always, follow the mothership at Believe Network. Guys, it's a Texas showdown in the postseason, and BetOnline is your number one source for all your baseball wagering info. This is obviously a huge baseball podcast, which up to the minute stats, news, scores, and matchup breakdowns. Get the latest game odds, spreads, and totals for the NFL and college football at your fingertips with BetOnline's real-time updates on statistics, news, and odds. We have everything you need to stay up to speed on each LCS game. Each LCS, really. LCS stands for League Championship Series. Each LCS, all the way through to the World Series. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to get in on the action. But don't forget to use the promo code BELIEVE, that's B-L-E-A-V, to receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. John, it's Wednesday, October 18th. We've already touched on football. We've already touched on baseball. So it feels only right that we start this podcast formally talking about basketball and also age, what it's like to get older. I've felt old a lot in my life, even though I'm not actually old, but like, I think this is the first time my age has really just kind of slapped me in the face and said, no, pal, you're washed up. Jace Richardson is now a Michigan State Spartan.
I mean, if you feel old, imagine how Tom feels. He's been chasing that second nap for so long that he has a dude's kid from that team.
I mean, it's even different too, because he has Davis Smith, who is the son of the former Spartan.
Okay.
But not his guy. I was going to say, it wasn't like his dude from his teams that was like when he took Michigan State to like the height of his powers and stayed pretty close to that for, you know, ever since. But for those who are too young, oh my gosh, it hurt. First of all, it hurts my heart. But second of all, Jace Richardson, the son of Jason Richardson, one of the best dunkers in NBA history, tremendous Michigan State Spartan back in the early 2000s, member of the national championship team, was, I think, a top four or five recruit in the country and then a top five draft pick by the Golden State Warriors back in the day. Michigan State legend, superstar. Jace, now looking to fill his shoes, is a pretty good prospect in his own right. John, I know you've watched a little bit of him and yeah. You know, have a bit of a scouting report for us.
Oh, man, I'm a sicko, huh? he's played on some pretty big teams, so that managed to make their way onto the Ocho in from time to time. He played for Bishop Gorman, and now he's transferred to a team, I believe, in Ohio, but they were just on this past week where he actually announced he was going to become a Spartan. He's on the same team as, if you're ready to feel old again, Carlos Boozer's twin sons are on his team, who are both five stars. They're a nice little squad, if you can imagine.
No kidding.
They were actually playing, Cooper Flagg's team, who is the consensus.
Man.
Yeah, it was pretty great. I mean, if you're going to watch high school.
That's a loaded game.
It was a fun game. I'm not going to lie. It was cool. So Jace, 6'3", combo guard, little light, but that's to be expected, you know, at this age. He's got plenty of time to grow size-wise, muscle-wise. He is a different player than his dad. I mean, like, his dad was pretty violent getting at the basket. Jace is a little smoother, I would say, as he developed a shot earlier in his career, and definitely playing top competition, as you heard. That's not like the only big game they've played. This is a kind of program that travels around and plays all the best teams. So not a shock when you think about, you know, his dad, that he would probably be on one of those programs. But he's ready for the moment, I think. And I think there was some consensus that it was, you know, either going to be Michigan State, Alabama, or Cincinnati. And I want to point those out because there's some talk about how, you know, Nate Oates could be the next heir to MSU, or actually, I think there's one other name that people need to consider is Cincinnati's head coach, Wes Miller, is quietly like really solid and is pulling in recruits and competing for recruits with the big boys like this, and has even pulled a couple of four stars this past class and whatever. I bring that up only to actually turn on it immediately and say, I get the impression, you know, without, you know, you heard Tom say, he is pretty clear that he is going to be coaching until he wins his second national championship or he dies. Like there's no other option for him. And he's clearly found a third wind as ref, you know, you just even look at the offer sheet for next year and even starting the year after that, guys aren't going to commit to a coach unless they're for sure he's going to be there. And the offer sheet is, I mean, I think I saw it was six of the top 25 guys and like maybe even like 10 of the top 50. Like he's big fish. He's whale hunting, right? And he's got a team this year, obviously, that we're going to talk about in a minute. But you're setting up future rosters that are going to compete as well. And I bring all that up because I think we are on, you know, we're entering into the twilight of Izzo's career. And I don't think he's going to go out with a whimper. I think we're going to go out with some really, really solid runs. And I probably starts this year, right? The preseason rankings came out. And the polls, human polls, have MSU ranked fourth in the AP and fourth in the coaches. Computer polls have MSU a little lower, eighth in Bart Torvik and 13th in KenPom. All that will change rapidly. But Austin, before we get too far down the road, I kind of didn't really let you talk about Jace or the roster. What do you think about that pickup?
I mean, it's hard to be upset about it, right? Like a legacy player like Jace, who, you know, you made a great point with Alabama and Cincinnati, you might hear those names. And if you're, you know, not following the sport super closely over the last couple of years, think that's the pond that we're fishing in. Like those are the programs that he's considering. Alabama right now has, I would say, is as strong a basketball program as there is in the country. I mean, they've been getting huge recruits, playing in very important games, really contending in the SEC, maybe not, you know, one of the top, they're not a blue blood or anything like that, like they are in football, but that's a very solid program. It's a very good program. Cincinnati, not too far behind in my estimation. That's always been sort of that, you know, high mid major is what I think most people will always have them, at least from our generation, will always think of them as. But I, you know, Mick Cronin took them to kind of a next level before he left for UCLA, and all they've done, like you said, with Wes Miller is kind of stay in that spot. So Jace obviously playing in Ohio right now, kind of the home school, home team for a lot of purposes in Cincinnati. Beating out those two says something. It says a lot about the relationship, like you said, that Izzo's built with his former players. And for all of those who say, oh, he yells at his players, then why is Jason Richardson telling his son he should go play for Tom Izzo? I mean, you're at the point now where you've got children of players that formerly played for him when he was arguably even tougher than he is now. If you go back and watch some of the ways he used to interact with his guys, you know, I think that storyline can be officially put to bed, or should be. It won't be, but it should be. But Jace is a great pickup. Again, like you said, as we look at kind of the 24, 25 and beyond roster, he probably rounds out the guard rotation, at least for 2024. You know, the group that's in there is honestly really impressive. Now, that team at this point could technically include A.J. Hogard or Hogard and whatever. Hogard. I'll change it every time I say it. And I've only had 4 years to practice. And then in Jaden Akins, but I think it's fair to wonder whether one or either of them will return to the team. So if you operate under the assumption that they're both gone, you know, you're talking about Trey Holloman, Jeremy Fears, and the recruit Kerr Tang, who will be a freshman there, really being the only three guards on the team at this point in time. So Jace is not only going to come to the team, but he will, in all likelihood, factor into the rotation. As a, it's not a big stretch to think he could be playing minutes as a true freshman. So that alone is important. He's a top 40 recruit across the board, higher than that by some ranking organizations. So all in all, great pickup. Like you said, would like to see him get a little bit bigger and ultimately kind of find a position. I think at this point, like you said, he's even listed as a combo guard, which means he's not a true point guard. He's not a true shooting guard. You know, in the recruiting services, typically you fall into one bucket or the other. But if you're split in the middle, that means he really hasn't yet. So would like to see him spend some time at one or the other in the next year or so and come down if you're ready to play next year. But all in all, you know, it's you don't want to look past this season, certainly, because you have a very, very good team that we'll talk about here in a second. But always good to see Tom, like you said, getting those reinforcements. And you said something, and not to be morbid, but you said he's either going to win his national championship or die. I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that those two things, depending on how he reacts, could happen on the same day.
He'd go out happy. He'd go out happy.
Exactly. I'm just obviously making a very morbid joke. But, yeah, I don't think Tom's going anywhere. And I don't think, and quite honestly, like, I don't think he would be getting the type of recruits that he's getting without that type of commitment. And also, you really quickly talked about those, you know, kind of who's the next in line. I don't think we should have that discussion. I don't think that it's the person that might take over Michigan State's program right now might not even be a head coach yet. It's entirely possible. So when you're scouting names or doing anything like that, until Michigan State's hanging that next banner, there's no reason to be thinking about that. So that's at one point in time was a very poignant conversation, but now it feels a little less relevant.
You know, I will continue to have my hot list that nobody asked for.
Oh, of course.
So if you ever,
I'm not telling you to stop. That to be clear.
I'm ready for that whenever that sad day comes. So, but let's go. Yeah, I jumped in a little too fast to this year, which is around the corner, by the way. Exhibition game starting this month. And I think it may be even be like Wednesday they are playing.
Closed door soon. I know that.
Yeah, the Tennessee game will be coming up here a little bit after that. But yeah, we are on pace here for basketball to thankfully, which we'll get to, take over here. I'm sorry, it's going to be next Wednesday is the first game against Hillsdale College. You're going to have to follow that one on Twitter. I don't even think it's on the Big Ten Plus network. Exhibition against Tennessee, that will be on the Big Ten Network, actually, the Maui Relief Charity game. And then, before you know it, 2.5 weeks from now, opening against James Madison to tip the season on November 6th. So, more to come, but the rosters are what they are. MSU, whether people around the country are comfortable with it or not, are favorites. You know, they are among the favorites that probably 8 to 10 teams that could contend to win the national championship. That's a good feeling. We haven't been there in a little while.
Yeah, I mean, it's a different tenor going into a season than we have had since, you know, the Cassius Winston senior year, it feels like a lifetime ago. But in reality, there's only been 3 full seasons between then and now. And it's it has not been a banner 3-year stretch. And I think we get spoiled. And I say this from like this weird place of privilege because Michigan State's made the tournament all 3 years. They hung with a very, very good Duke team that made the national championship game, if I remember correctly, or at least the Final Four 2 years ago, and then made the Sweet 16 last year. And yet I'm still sitting here saying, you know, it's not a banner year. Because if you look at other teams in the conference, you look at Purdue, for example. In the last 3 years, I believe Purdue's lost to a 16, a 15, and maybe a 14 in the tournament. And which side of this, you know, there's appeal to both sides, I suppose. But all of that aside, Michigan State is entering this year with the deepest team they've had in a very long time. I would argue it's right up there with Tom Izzo's deepest teams. I don't know that the high level talent is as high as he's ever had, but there is still some very high level talent on a very deep roster that's at least on paper incredibly multidimensional. I mean, this is a team that has a ton of guard depth that you could honestly play a lot of at the same time. The front court, I think, is the biggest difference in this year's team as opposed to last year's. You've got an athletic element with Cohen Carr, who may not be this big minutes eater, but brings an element, again, that they haven't had in a very long time. Xavier Booker in the same boat. Obviously, Matty Sissoko returning. And in a way, the loss of Joey Hauser multiplies that athletic effect, because as huge as he was for Michigan State and as well as he played his senior year, was never going to be a defensive anchor. At a minimum, Michigan State's bringing a lot more length and a lot more athleticism to that front court, which should theoretically play a role in improving that end of the court as well. So just a much different looking team. And you also have just so much experience. I think that's probably the thing that sets it apart for me, is especially now with that run to the Sweet 16 last year and that incredible game against Kansas State. These guys have been on the biggest stage. They're accustomed to playing great teams in the Big Ten night in and night out for the last few years. And these are guys that have done it now. I mean, Tyson Walker's been in the Big Ten for 2 years now. A.J. Hoggard has been playing consistently in the Big Ten for 3 years now. Jaden Akins has been in the rotation for two. Like, Matty Sissoko has been here for multiple years. Malik Hall has been here for like 7 years. So there's just a ton of depth and experience that is very nicely supported by this injection of youth. And, you know, I think this is the type of team that can kind of match up with just about anybody, because they have all of these tricks in the bag, at least sitting here today, October 18th on paper. They can throw a lot of different looks at you. They got, like I said, tons of depth, tons of scoring, tons of rebounding, what should be a very athletic and competitive defensive team that should be able to press and run and do all the things that Izzo always wants to do. And they should be able to impose their will on a lot of different teams, no matter how they're made up throughout the year. I think the biggest thing to me about this team is the guard play. I mean, you have three guys who would be lead guards on a lot of teams throughout the country in Walker, Hogard and Akins. I mean, those are three dudes. I mean, Akins, transparently, he could have left. There were rumblings he was going to leave this offseason to go be a starter somewhere else. And I don't think anybody could have blamed him. And I think he would have been legitimately entitled to that opportunity. He may still start on this team. It's very possible they run three guards out there several nights, but if not every night. But that type of depth allows you to survive an injury. Whereas if you look at last year, like say Hauser goes down last year, who are you playing? Like, you know, there's no real answer. Whereas this year, again, you're not wishing this at all, but if any of the starters go down, there's some capable replacement at every single position. There's a way for Michigan State to have a band-aid to cover it up and still be one of those national contenders. So it's a different feeling going into the season. People should embrace it. And quite honestly, this is what watching Michigan State basketball should feel like. This is where we should want to be on the national scene, because MSU is as much of a blue blood as anybody else. They're one of the best programs in the country, and people should embrace it and not get deterred if they lose one of these games to tough teams, because they're going to bounce back. And, you know, it's all that matters is that they're turning the right corner come March. But this is a team that can get it done then, I think.
Yeah, the great news is, I think you saw with the two wins and even the close loss to a incredible tournament performance, one of the best of all time in the Sweet 16 game, is that these guys bought in. You know, all year it was kind of a fight. Like, you know, and it was the standard thing where, like, Tom is just, like, pleading, you know, specifically with his point guard, buy in. You know, like, trust this process, trust it, it will pay off. And then it did, you know, you saw it pay off, beating probably a more talented or deeper team in Marquette. And there was kind of like that light bulb moment, right? Where it's like, wow, we can, do that, if we do listen to him, things do finally, we can break through. And I think if this team continues that mindset, you know, buying in on a lot of what feels like bullshit from Tom through the entire season, and trust me, we and all the fans, we do it every year. We're like, this is Tom's method is driving us insane, but it works. And I think he has the talent that if they buy in, they could make a real run this year. But it's not going to happen just, you know, out of the gate. They're going to be good, but they're going to lose games. They're going to have to get better through the year, just like every year. He's going to tear them down. He's going to do weird roster stuff. You know, the standard stuff's going to happen. But as long as they're getting better, and you can tell they're getting better, and A.J. Hogard is completely locked in and wants to go pro, like, which is the goal.
Yeah.
He has now the information from the NBA of what he needs to do, not just Tom. And I think we're going to start to see it come to life. So that is exciting here. A lot more exciting than the football program.
Woo!
Yeah. So when we left you, Michigan State went to Rutgers and started a new quarterback, had a little juice out of the gate. Caden Hauser, 3 touchdowns, 2 passing, led a touchdown drive on the first drive, which was exhilarating. I hadn't felt that before this season. And then things kind of went south and blew an 18-point lead. And I think the worst part about blowing a big lead is when you blow it and the other team doesn't like come to their senses and are like the better team and rally back. They were also bad. MSU just managed to flub some things that were inexcusable. And they lost 27-24. It was all you can do at this point is kind of be like, well, that was pretty bad. Arguably the worst. And now you know that at the very least these coaches aren't going to be there. None of them shouldn't be.
Yeah. No, I mean, well, quickly on that, if any of these coaches, just the coaches, the men coaching the players and instructing them on how to do their jobs better, if any of them are still at the university at the turn of this year, it's organizational failure. It's a lack of interest in actually being a serious program. Mm-hmm. There's not a single position group, arguably, that you look across the team and you can say, okay, from the day that these guys took over to today, they've all gotten a lot better. It doesn't exist. And again, I think it is important to say that, you know, it's obvious and important to recognize that, like, this is a weird situation. You've gone through a lot of stuff. All of that entirely fair. You started a freshman quarterback, fine. All of that's well and good. The fact of the matter is you were in a tight game with Rutgers to begin with.
Yeah,
that, to me, is not good. You're riding a 3-game losing streak coming into this. Again, to me, kind of a joke. I don't think it's worth even rehashing, like, how bad the program, how bad a shape the program is in and how horrific the coaching has been for the last few years. It's really, I mean, we've talked about ad nauseum here that horse is dust now. We've beaten it so much. But I think in this one, it's important to just crystallize, like, why this was so spectacularly sad and draw a really depressing parallel. This loss is, to me, entirely, in many ways, on the coaches. Like, to not have your guys ready to roll. Okay, so first of all, maybe this is just me. I have never heard the name Michael O'Shaughnessy before in my life until this game. The young man who flubbed the punt that led to a touchdown, which led to this whole avalanche starting. Why? Why are we running two punters out there? What is going on? Ross Ells, Howard, I just do not understand how this man, like, has he ever coached a game before? Has he ever even seen the game of football? Like, it's shocking levels of failure there. Mm-hmm. And this is all, honestly, two of the biggest plays in this game, you could argue the reason why this all fell apart are on the special teams. There's O'Shaughnessy flubbing that play, which, again, it's not even really on him. He shouldn't be in that position. He shouldn't be in that position because he shouldn't be playing. And then Tyrell Henry,
yep,
just not fielding a kickoff.
Yep.
And on top of that, Michigan State being in an onside recover kickoff like formation up three with 8 minutes to go in the game. What world are we living in where that's the right thing to do? And who's making that call? It's almost irrelevant because, like I said, all these guys are going to be gone in 8 weeks or whatever it is. And they don't deserve to be head coaches or coaches, no matter who is running the ship right now. But like, those two things are so spectacularly dumb and such spectacular mismanagement of what should be the most straightforward phase of the game, by the way. There is so few ways to screw up special teams. There's like three options. And we chose two of the three.
I'm actually kind of impressed. I mean, like, you can take a step back and be like, this is interesting because this isn't the first game that the special team, remember the Iowa game?
There are so many examples. I mean, Jaden Reed returning touchdowns is the only reason Ross Ells hasn't been, like, that Michigan State fans haven't gone and packed up his house and politely just hired a moving service for him. Like, it's staggering. It's staggering how bad that is. And the depressing part here is that this all feels now, it's such a circus that you just, I hate to wish away football because I love football as much as many things, but it just all feels irrelevant moving forward. Like, even to say, oh, you should be watching because these young kids, you know, you want to see who might stick around next year. I have no idea. I wouldn't blame every single kid on the roster if they wanted a fresh start somewhere else. And I think you might see something similar to that in a few weeks. You've already seen every recruit in the book decommit. I wouldn't be surprised if kids follow them into the portal. But this all feels like such a huge circus. It feels so eerily familiar to the end of the John L. Smith era, where the John L. Smith tenure was just chaotic from beginning to end. There's the inmates are running the asylum. The same things were going wrong in spectacular fashion across the board. And somehow this last 4 years of, we'll call it the Tucker era, have been higher highs and somehow significantly lower lows. Like, I did not think, I think I tweeted this week, like, I did not think that we as a program, as Michigan State as a program, would ever, ever end up in this position again. If any, that Mark D'Antonio brought stability and he brought clout and he brought like just normalization to a program that is so hard to undo. Like, that is, it is so difficult to undo that work that he did.
So fast,
like right away, like right away. And there are other extenuating circumstances like a pandemic and what is that and the other thing. But like to fall in just back into the rudderless program bucket once again is something I genuinely like never thought would happen. And so we've said it before, I'll say it again. The hire that Michigan State makes in the coming months, there has very arguably never been a more important hire for the athletic department, period. Any sport, any position. There's never been a more important hire. Football has never been able to generate more money. It's never been easier to lose players. And your conference is getting as packed and is arguably going to be the most talented top to bottom of any in the country. It is going to be so incredibly easy to just keep doing what you're doing now, remain at the bottom, find yourself being a, you know, the Vanderbilt of the Big Ten, or down with Northwestern, down with Indiana. Those could be, I mean, sitting here today, that's your caliber right now in this very small vacuum. But you don't want to stay there. And you could. It's not a difficult path to staying there if you don't nail this hire. It has to happen. And if it doesn't, you know, we're going to be, this is going to be a big time basketball program. We're a big time basketball podcast. We'll probably start talking about the NFL, might even dabble into some other random sports just to avoid how embarrassing the rest of this is going to be.
You know, all of that is unfortunately true. I will say, There is, if anyone's coming here for optimism, I can find it for you. It's never been easier. It's never been easier. Doesn't mean it's easy. It's never been easier to go from bad to good quickly.
Absolutely true.
Or even bad to competent. Colorado is an example of that. Ole Miss is an example of that. There's new opportunities now. The other piece is, I don't think MSU will ever fall as far. You know, yes, MSU did just lose to Rutgers. As a program, MSU has the inherent advantage of our fan base size, the media markets associated with it, and we still watch. Yes, that can change, but we have, as a program, a lot of things going for it that even I think if this football hire doesn't work out, you know, after 3 or 4 years, I don't think it's impossible to hire the next guy and have it work out, because they still have all the money that'll be coming in from the Big Ten media revenue, and we get full shares. Not all programs in our company, or excuse me, our conference do. We're going to be involved in, we'll have the funding, we'll have the, you know, the resources, we have the eyeballs, we have everything that you would want as a head coach. We got it. So I think, you know, even if it is the most important hire we've had, I also think that if it's not nailed, it doesn't mean it's the death sentence for the program.
No, I think that's an important clarifier. MSU is always going to have a shot. MSU is always going to be in the game, mm-hmm. just by virtue, and we've said it so many times here, and this is where it comes to roost, just by being in the Big Ten, mm-hmm. you've got a shot. With program history, you've got a shot. With billionaire alums, you've got a shot. With facilities, you've got a shot. Like Michigan State does, yes, they will always be there. They'll always be in the conversation. But it's very easy to slip into the sleeping giant category where you're like, why don't they have it figured it out? Yep. Why don't they have it figured out? I mean, again, I don't know that there's a direct parallel, but I look at Virginia Tech. Virginia Tech was as good. They were on top of the college football world, or at least near the upper crust, for 2 decades, a very long time. And now they are awful. They're rudderless, and they don't have the resources that Michigan State has, and they're in the ACC. There, but for the grace of God, go we in that regard. But, you know, your point is valid, too, about just as easy as it is to slide down that slope, it's very easy to go the other way, too. But you got to get the hire right to go the other direction, because the further you slip, the harder it gets. Even though it's easier, it's harder to right the ship. I mean, at some point you fall into the bucket of, again, without, and that's why this hire in particular is so important. If another one flames out, you fall into the bucket of, oh, I can go resurrect that and then go get a great job. Like that's where the thought process goes for head coaches. You become a stepping stone. That's and fun. Right now, I don't feel as though Michigan State is a stepping stone. I believe that someone could come here and be here for 10 years and achieve just about everything they want to achieve, you know, top to bottom as an organization, as a program. I think you can win Big Ten titles even with these other teams coming in, or at least be very close to the top of the conversation. I think you can compete for a ton of recruits. We've seen it. And imagine if you had an actual program on the field or product on the field to entice kids, it could get even better. And I think that there's enough talent on this team, you know, depending on who stays, to turn it around fairly quickly. So there is reason for optimism, but sitting here today, like I honestly have a hard time watching the games, because it doesn't matter unless you get this next hire right. Like truly, it is, that is the only thing that matters. I mean, Caden Hauser to dig into the game a little bit, Caden Hauser being good could be huge. By all indications, he's super committed to the program and he wants to be here. So if you're going to watch the game, I guess that's the guy to watch. Saw enough flashes from him in against Rutgers to be excited. I think he's, again, it's just difficult to get like a hardcore read on him because he's playing in a weird offense and doesn't have the most talent around him. But if you can surround him with a couple of guys, bring in some transfers and give him an offensive coordinator who knows what he's doing, you know, there's no reason to think he can't be successful. So I feel like we've spent enough time on this game in particular.
You're right. Yeah, you're right. And I guess if you don't mind, I just want to quick.
No, go ahead, please.
Just one quick thing. I think we've reiterated something and there's a byproduct of the reiteration that the coaches have clearly shown that they are incapable of making players better. That doesn't mean the players are bad. It means that the players haven't been coached to become correct. Better. We know that there are talented players on this roster. We know that because there are recruiting services that many of our listeners pay a lot of money to learn more about. And yes, they can make mistakes, but they are right more than they are wrong, right? So with that, this is an easy solve that is more difficult said than done. More easy said than done is you get a coach in there that there is talent. These guys, Aaron, like you look around and you're like, dang, Zion Young, Aaron Brulé, like there are guys on the defense that in offense even that are like not terrible. And God, if they had just been given a year's worth, much less 4 years worth of proper, you know, execution and strategy, things can change quickly. And if a new coach comes in, everyone's afraid that, oh, we're going to lose everyone to the portal. Where are these kids going? No, seriously, where are they going to go? They haven't been taught how to play at a high level. There's going to have to be a program that says, yeah, I want to take a risk on that. Mm-hmm. And 3, you're at a Power 5 program and you're already a starter. Where do you think you're going to go? And by the way, you're playing for one of the worst Power 5 teams. So you think you're going to go in and start at a better one? Like, so my optimism here is there's talent on the roster. They just need to be coached up. There isn't coaching there. And I don't think there's a lot of places for people to go. Zion Young probably could get picked up to go to a bigger program. There are a couple guys that could probably be picked up to go to a bigger program, younger guys. The juniors and seniors, like you can go to the portal, man, but like good luck. Like Tom Izzo says, good luck, because not everyone gets picked up. We've seen it. We've seen it when guys were moved on from our program. Not everyone got picked up. They're in FCS schools, man. So like, I think the portal can giveth and it can take away. And I think there's an opportunity for a new staff to come in and see the tools, talk to each kid and say, hey, man, like, we're not this far away as it feels like. You guys aren't that bad. The coaching has just been miserable that you've been given. So, you know, I feel bad for these kids, but at the same time, I don't think it's really not that. It's not them.
No, I think you're absolutely right about that. I mean, if you just look at the composite talent, Michigan State is a top 20 in terms of just that recruiting service talent. But you're right. It's you have this big ball of clay. If you don't do anything with it, it just remains clay. So you need to, like, it's institutional. And that's why, that's why this hire is so important, because it has to be the person to unlock that. And I think you're right. I think there's a lot of convincing that can be done. But make no mistake, plenty of guys will go, which is fine. And it's their right. There will also be plenty of guys coming in because there will be opportunity to compete to win your jobs. And like you said, typically when you see guys transfer, it's for kind of one of two reasons. It's somebody that is unhappy in their current place and wants to have a chance to start somewhere else, right? Or it's someone who's overperformed, like a Tez Walker at North Carolina now, who overperformed and wants a bigger stage. I don't know how many guys at MSU fit the bill on the second one. Again, Zion Young, I think, has a legitimate case to go play elsewhere if he wanted to pursue that. I think Keon Coleman was a great example of it last year. He was thinking along those same lines. To your point, John, if guys haven't played and want to, you know, just a fresh start, but more power to them. There's a reason why this is now an option. But there is a case to be made for guys sticking around and being a part of something new and exciting, because there is also the element that, like, a lot of these guys commit to the program. They commit to being Michigan State Spartans. I think that's the case with Hauser in particular. They don't necessarily commit to playing for Tucker as much as they commit to playing for Michigan State. And if you're a freshman, like, if you vibe with this head coach, you still got 4 years of playing for him. And you know what I mean? It's not necessarily a death sentence. So yeah, I don't think it is a, you know, this whole thing, what's happening this year can be very easily attributed to, like, freak situation. Let's hit this fresh restart. I just think a breath of fresh air for this program is exactly what it needs. And I'm just very hopeful that this leadership can get it together and hire the right person to be that breath of fresh air. So Michigan State can kind of, like, again, for the first time really since D'Antonio, truly for the first time since D'Antonio, because Tucker was not this, conduct a legitimate coaching search, hire someone with optimism at the forefront, and just say, okay, guys, a background check would be preferable, and just do it the right way. Do it the right way. The way that programs, when they fire coaches for a lack of performance or other things, typically does it. So let's just hope that that is the case. Unfortunately, there are games between now and this wonderful reset.
And we will watch them if you don't feel like it. The let's quickly blast through. You've got half an hour. Last week's results, some good ones. I don't know if you saw the Dana Holgorsen revenge game.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
He left a Power 5 program for Houston, who is now a Power 4 program. That was an odd choice. Hail Mary to win. Did you see this one?
I did. It was insane. And it was right after West Virginia had scored on, like, a 50-yard pass with 12 seconds left in the game to take the lead. So just bonkers all the way around. Yeah. Holgo.
he got lucky.
That had to feel pretty good.
Yeah. Florida State took down Syracuse 41-3. And I think it's time to talk about Florida State being, like, natty for real.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think I don't know when the first college football playoff thing comes out, but I at this point, you have to expect them to be one of the four teams that's named.
I know it's Syracuse, but, like, it helped. You're beating the shit out of teams, right? Like, yeah. The problem is they listen, I don't know a ton about football strategy, but I do know you should give the ball to your best players. They did not do that against Boston College. They are starting to use Keon Coleman, and it may shock you. It's working. And so he's like, just give him the ball.
Huge game this weekend for them that we'll talk about, though. Big test against Duke.
We'll talk about that one. Speaking of amazing wide receivers on the field, Oregon at Washington. I know this was your favorite game of the weekend.
It was my favorite game of the season so far. Just two teams that are legitimate to me. Playoff. They should both be considered for the playoff. Like, I know Oregon lost this game, and you can make a very strong argument that they really just played themselves out of it by taking too many silly risks and mismanaging the end of the first half. But they are for real. Bo Nix, one of my worst takes, I have to say. Auburn Bo Nix was awful, but man, he's a good player. I don't know if he's still not a great downfield passer, but he played his ass off in this game. 33 of 44 for 337 and two touchdowns. Bucky Irving, the Minnesota transfer running back, is a beast, 127 yards and a touchdown. But Washington is just, they are just a machine. And they did all of this without Jalen McMillan. That's just how deep their receivers are. Odunze and Polk each go over 120 yards with a touchdown. Giles Jackson, the Michigan transfer, scored on a big play touchdown. Penix is just surgical. And I didn't even think he played, like, all that well. Like, he had some really silly missed throws and had guys in his face, still had 300 yards and four touchdowns and one silly interception. I think I was saying this to you before we started. I don't know why Washington's not the number one team in the country. I really don't. I do not understand. I mean, this is the ultimate why do we have preseason poll moment, because you can't argue with what you've seen from Washington. They've given up plenty of points to Cal in Arizona, but this offense beating Oregon like that, I think, is as big a statement as anyone has made in college football. Quite honestly, if it's not Washington, it should be Florida State. Florida State's beaten LSU Florida State, you know, as they beat another good team recently as well. I can't remember who it was, but they've got two really good signature wins on their schedule. I don't know Clemson. They beat Clemson, who maybe isn't vintage Clemson, but like, find me a team with two better wins on their schedule. The preseason poll is skewing everything right now. Michigan being two, Georgia being one, quite frankly, doesn't feel right aside from them winning two straight championships.
That's a carryover from
100%. Both of them are, but I hope that it's reflected when the time comes to do the actual college football playoff seeding, because to me, Florida State and Washington are the two best teams in the country right now. And in terms of who's next, I mean, I think you can make a case for Oklahoma. Like, I don't know. Sure. I don't think Michigan, Ohio State, or Georgia deserves to be where they are sitting here today.
I noticed you didn't say anything about our boy Drew Aller's squad, so that was interesting.
Not yet.
I know.
We'll see this weekend.
All right, Notre Dame beats the hell out of USC, and 48-20. You could fire Grinch mid-season, right? Like,
Not if he's got the P tape, which apparently he has on Lincoln Riley. Again, the compromise must be really incredible. I do not know any other explanation. A Notre Dame team that has not had a phenomenal offense this year hangs 48 on you. Yeah. After scoring 20 against Louisville the prior week, and 21, they hadn't scored more than 21 points since they played Central Michigan a month ago.
Yeah. Yeah. This is
no pointy.
Oh man, Caleb, he's got to get out of it. You've wasted a generational quarterback. Congratulations, guys.
And they still got a chance if they could somehow beat Oregon and Washington, but right now they're looking like clearly the third best team in that conference.
Speaking of great quarterbacks, someone's knocking on the door of QB1 in the NFL draft. Drake May takes down Miami 41-31, got his boy Tez Walker back.
Oof.
Another dark horse for the playoff, right?
100%. North Carolina has to be in that discussion. And again, for every Bo Nix take, I have a Drake May, because I was on the record with Drake May well in advance of last season. Again, make an argument there. Two wins over South Carolina and Miami are right up there with just about anybody else's. You can see why they wanted Tez Walker back so badly. Three touchdown catches in this one, some of them looking easy. I think North Carolina is certainly in that conversation.
I'll give you a little grace on the Bo Nix. He was bad at Auburn.
He was bad.
And I think we have seen quarterbacks go to Auburn and struggle, have we not?
Oh, who among us has not sent a quarterback to Auburn to struggle?
All right, let's jump to Big Ten quickly. Michigan takes down Indiana 52-7.
Next.
Okay. Ohio State. Michigan was down 7-0 in that game. Hmm. Ohio State takes down Purdue 41-7. They can't run the ball. That's okay. It looks like this year they're starting to figure out they should just use their NFL receivers.
Yeah, it's past time to just throw the ball to Marvin Harrison 400 times a game. Like, just, I don't know why you do anything else, truly. I don't understand why you wouldn't throw him the ball 25 times a game. Seems like you said, they're starting to figure it out. He's got over six. This week was 6 for 105 and a touchdown. Against Maryland was 8 for 163 and a touchdown. So, yeah, they just need to do more things like that.
Okay, let's move on to Penn State takes down Massachusetts 63-0. Wow. Illinois topples Maryland, and October Maryland is just on
top. Oh, baby. Yes. We tried to tell you. Again, we don't know much, but this is one of the things that we know quite well. Maryland, that glass slipper turns right back into a pumpkin every time the clock strikes October. Illinois, good for them. Getting a nice win on the road after what's been a disappointing follow-up season to a fun year last year, but a nice win either way. Yeah, Maryland, again, I don't know that there's a more irrelevant college football program out there.
All right, and then lastly, the sicko game of the week, my favorite, Iowa takes down Wisconsin 15-6. The under hit again. It's free money, folks. Deacon Hill with 37 passing yards for Iowa in the win. And since he has started the past three games, how many yards do you think he's thrown for in those three games combined?
I'm saying under 150.
Close. 162, I believe.
Wow.
Three games.
John, I want us all to brace for the fact that Iowa, this Iowa, is going to go 11-1 and will play in the Big Ten championship game.
This kid, bless him, you know, nothing against him, but he currently, let's do some quick math. 23 of 62.
Nice.
In his three starts this year. I'll give the Michigan State game a start because he came in the second drive. 23 of 62.
Pretty bad.
It's so bad, dude.
They literally, Iowa just locked up the division.
Uh-huh.
They're 6-1. They're 3-1 in conference. They just beat the only team that's above 500 in their division in Wisconsin. They have home. Their next four games are home against Minnesota, home against Northwestern, home against Rutgers, home against Illinois, and then on the road at Nebraska. It doesn't even matter if they lose one of those games. That's they're going to go at worst 10-2. They're going to make the Big Ten championship game, and they're going to lose by 1,000. So I mean, the only time they've played a decent team this year is Penn State, and they lost 31-0.
Yep. So we're going to see that again.
Yeah, that's going to be a fun game to have on in the background somewhere and not watch.
Can I just say something quickly? I think it is a perfect way to end the Big Ten West. Is to have.
I agree.
I couldn't pick a better way. In that, the team that will advance and win, I think, all of their games against Big Ten West opponents will have to fire their offensive coordinator because he failed to meet the bare minimum of his performance improvement plan, and yet went to the championship. That's how bad it is.
It's pretty stunning. It's got to be unprecedented.
Be embarrassed.
You should be. Yes.
All right. National preview quickly, and not a ton of major games. So Tennessee at Bama, Bama revenge game, 9.5-point phase for Bama. Who do you have here?
I would take Tennessee against the spread. I can't believe I'm the one saying it, but Bama's tough to trust right now. I mean, they've played, you know, aside from beating Mississippi State, Middle Tennessee, and South Florida somewhat handily, you can't even really say that about South Florida. They've been in a lot of close games against mid-tier SEC teams. I mean, Ole Miss 24-10.
Hey. We don't talk about Lane Kiffin. Right,
fine. Mississippi State and A&M. A&M and Arkansas, both close games. Arkansas absolutely could have beat him last week.
I think I
would take Tennessee with the points, but it's a lot of points. But I think Alabama probably wins, but it would not surprise me at all if Tennessee won this game.
My favorite thing is that Alabama will be favored to win the rest of their games this year up until the SEC championship game. And this is the worst Saban team in how long?
Yeah, and it's a joke.
And they will still, they still have a clear path to the playoff.
Oh yeah, I mean, it is funny though. Somebody, I think it was Tom Fornelli, maybe tweeted that, like, you know how Alabama has lost a step. It's like they're in a close game with Arkansas just during the game, and no one's freaking out.
Nope.
Yeah. So there you go.
All right, Utah at USC. This was going to be a cooler game until USC lost by 28. I feel my little tip for everyone. I believe Utah is the West USA version of Iowa in that you can trust them for unders. I want to believe that they are 7-0 on unders this year.
Wow.
So consider it. USC sputtering. Just a thought. Yeah. 56 is the over under.
As bad as USC's defense is, Utah's offense is not good.
Right, they're not scoring a lot of
points. It's the immovable force, against the stoppable object, or whatever it is.
So yeah, I like Utah. I like Utah here to win, actually, and also the under. All right, Big Ten preview. Rutgers at Indiana. Rutgers, a favorite. And I want to say quickly, we talked a lot of shit about Rutgers, but I will want to make a note. Greg Schiano has earned a job out of that shithole.
Like, agreed.
He will win this game, make them bowl eligible, and someone needs to hire him.
I don't disagree with you at all. I mean, I know we talk shit on Rutgers because of who they are as a program, but he has brought all of the things that Michigan State misses right now, mm-hmm. which is just stability, coaching. Like they're 5-2.
I know they're going to beat Indiana.
They're 5-2, and they're probably going to win this weekend, and they're going to go to a bowl game.
That's like, awesome.
Again, it's not a high bar to have to clear, but that's all we're looking for at this point from Michigan State. When we talk about like meeting the bare minimum requirements, this is what we're talking about. Like, beat the teams that you're better than. Beat the teams you should beat. And that's what Rutgers has done. That's what Michigan State has failed to do.
That said, if MSU considers hiring Greg Schiano, this is a basketball podcast. Again,
I don't even want to live in that world. I don't want to venture down that path just yet.
I forgot a game that I want to touch on because it's a potential head coach, Duke at Florida State. Elko, with a win, maybe becomes too hot of a product. Is that possible?
I think it's absolutely possible. That's kind of what I was a little bit nervous about going into this game. All Duke has done is beat the teams they're supposed to beat and then some. They've got a little test here coming up, though. That's the back half of the schedule is loaded. It starts this week at Florida State. It's at Florida State, at Louisville, home against Wake, at North Carolina. I mean, oof. Yeah, you got to – but, yeah, I think if they were to win two of those three games, he's the hottest name on the market, and you just hope that Michigan State is the best job out there because otherwise, you know, a lot of other schools are going to be hitting up his phone. That's for sure.
Certainly a game to watch on Saturday evening if you choose not to watch another game that's taking place at the same time. Minnesota at Iowa. We're in rivalry game territory. We're playing for the Floyd of Rosedale Trophy, I believe. Over under in this game, 32.5. Feels high to me. 32.5.
High scoring affair. In Iowa City. Yeah, I mean, God, if you want to have, just like last week when you had Iowa, Wisconsin on juxtaposed against Oregon and Washington, this week you have the opportunity to have that game juxtaposed against Tennessee and Bama. Bama not even necessarily a high-powered offense, but you want to see two different sports being played at the same time. That's how you accomplish that. But again, Iowa's going to win, and they're just going to be in the Big Ten Championship, and you know, the earth will keep spinning.
I like the idea of winning your division, scoring the fewest points as possible. It's like playing at Heisman. You're like, no, we're just going to play defense. Like, we're going to score 11 points and see if we get that's enough. Wisconsin at Illinois. Illinois upset Maryland. Illinois was down and out, right? And all of a sudden, you know, Wisconsin, who is supposed to be much better, by the way, and I know they're 4-2, but it's been not the most beautiful start to the Luke Fickle era. And I would say if you get ahead of your skis and start to look ahead to your blowout loss to Ohio State next week, you can lose to Illinois. Like, they've already shown they can beat mid teams. So,
yeah, Wisconsin has no right to look ahead here.
And they're out Mordecai. He's out. He's hurt.
Right. So it's going to be one of the other two transfer quarterbacks they brought in. So Fickle deserves a little longer leash. He probably brought in a brand new team, but yeah, this is not one you can just gloss over for sure.
I mean, yeah, they're running a kid out there to Braden Locke, 15-30, 122 and a pick. I mean, yikes. So, and then Northwestern at Nebraska. There's no end to the hell of the Big Ten West. Like, every single combination of teams is a new level of disaster. It's just astonishing. And then when you couple the Rutgers-Indiana game on this other side, it's like, what a terrible slate.
Yeah, just there's one of these weeks every year in the Big Ten, and this is the one. bad in, bad out, just awful. It will be very funny when we reach this point of next year when there are no divisions and these great teams from the Pac-12 come in. It's going to be very funny to look at the standings and see, oh, look at that. It's the entire Big Ten West at the bottom. It's going to be very funny. Yeah,
it all pays off because hopefully, you know, we were rewarded with the Penn State at Ohio State game. Game of the year so far. Biggest test of Drew Aller's career. Mm-hmm. Ohio State. Same with Kyle McCord. You know, I'm excited. I mean, I don't know. Who do you think? Ohio State's a 4.5-point favorite. What do you think on this one?
I think Penn State's going to win this game.
Okay.
Straight up. Money line. I know they haven't been the most awe-inspiring wins thus far, but if you look at their schedule, they haven't really played in a close game yet. Mm-hmm. I mean, the closest game they've played was a 30-13 win at Illinois. Now,
that's okay.
And honestly, they beat Iowa 31-0. Iowa's defense is actually good.
Like, I'm with you, man. I don't think I think they're really being on. I think it's shocking to me that no one's talking about Penn State nationally more.
I've been saying it here for a long time.
It's true.
I think they are national title contenders, and this week will prove to me whether I'm nuts or if I'm actually onto something. I think they have the Penn State's got the better quarterback. They don't have the best player on the field because that's Marvin Harrison, but they do have some very good corners specifically in Kalen King, who is an NFL player, top first, second round draft pick. Not a lot of programs can throw that at Marvin Harrison. Not to say that he won't get the better of him or still be very productive, but not a lot of teams have the talent that Penn State has. This is a top 8 to 10 talented team in the entire country with a great young quarterback, a really good running game, which we saw give Ohio State fits against Notre Dame. So I think there's, and quite honestly, again, like Audric Estime, or Estime had 70 yards on 14 carries. Again, I mean, Notre Dame ran the ball for 176 yards. None of them necessarily huge, but you had two running backs getting over 7 yards a carry and Estime getting 5 yards a carry against this Ohio State when Hartman wasn't doing anything. And so
Notre Dame's running game is kind of mid. It's not great.
Yeah, exactly. Notre Dame's offense is mid. Even though what they did against USC, it's more of an indictment of USC. It's in the shoe, which is the biggest element here. If this was at Penn State, I'd be hammering Penn State. Yep. But I think Ohio State is the best player on the field, but Penn State's offense, I think they're going to do it. I think they're going to win this game. And then all of a sudden people are going to say, now, wait a minute, is Penn State the best team in the country? And then when they roll out that first college football playoff, this is when I wonder, does Michigan's lack of schedule come back to bite them? Because you're going to be sitting there with Florida State with great wins, especially if they beat Duke, Washington with great wins, Penn State with great wins, all three of those programs, plus Georgia, they've all got better wins on their schedule than Michigan will have until they have the chance to play Ohio State and Penn State.
Yeah.
I wonder how it all plays out.
Yeah. I don't know if Michigan, or if you're a fan of Michigan, you have to worry about the playoff, you know, rankings. You're going to get your two shots.
You don't. Exactly.
That's all that matters, right? So, but you know, there are games that take place ahead of time, including one in East Lansing. Michigan State hosts the Wolverines on Saturday evening. Alcohol being provided to those who bring American currency, right, which I'm sure will make things a little more fun.
A good idea, for sure.
Oh, dear. Hey, here's the thing. When's the last time you remember Michigan was a 24-point favorite against Michigan State? Coming off where Michigan State was coming off a loss to Rutgers.
Was that or was that not the COVID year?
It was a year. COVID happened that year, but 2020 was the year and Michigan State won that game. And I will say, it looks bleak. I will also say, as I want to tie this back, the callback to there's enough talent on Michigan State's team to compete with Michigan. The coaching, not so much.
Right.
However, Michigan State beat Michigan in 2020 by doing what? Playing backyard football. They just played, go get it, toss it up to your best player, contain on defense, hold them to field goals, and on offense, didn't overthink it. there's a lot of overthinking going on in Jay Johnson's offense right now. Asking people to do things, frankly, that is just ridiculous. Asking a former punter turned tight end to start running routes and expecting contributions from him. You have Harold Joyner taking first drive carries. Like, you have things that are happening that are unnecessary. If you just play your best players and give them the ball, toss it up, don't overthink it. We've seen it can work. It doesn't mean it's gonna. It can work, and you can be a team doing that. Michigan fans will say, well, we were bad in 2020. Well, okay. Like, I can't change that. You had the talent was there. I'll tell you that. Same situation. So now you're just a lot better, not more talent, and a lot better coached up. I don't know. This game to me, I think everyone knows what the likely outcome will be. But you've said it to me a million times. This game brings out stars that unexpected stars sometimes, and names that pop that you never hear from again. Ricky White, Jalen Watson, you know, like it's possible. So I'll let you go ahead. What do you think? And then
no, this is a 50-50 game every single time. No matter, it always starts that way. One team is usually much more talented. No, one team is more talented than the other every time out. But you can throw it in such a stupid cliche, but you can throw a lot of things out the window in this one. That being said, Michigan is a substantially better team. That being said, I think Michigan State, regardless of the roster, is still probably the most talented team by a decent chunk, maybe Nebraska notwithstanding, that Michigan's going to have to play. It's on the road. It's at night. I think Michigan fans will be well represented, but it's still, you know, a hostile environment. I don't know that that's going to affect Michigan. I think they're a really well-coached team. They're disciplined. They played in big games. I think that's the beauty in a weird, to maybe not my favorite term to use, but the beauty of the way that they play is like they come in and they hit you with a sledgehammer over and over. They have an identity. They stick to it, period. They haven't had a team even come close to throwing them off of that like schedule or that that cadence because they're super talented. I think if there's a path to winning this game for Michigan State, it's to make JJ McCarthy be the one that has to beat you. You can't just let Corum and Edwards run at you 1,000 times in this game and bludgeon you to death, which is what they've done to every other team. Again, Michigan State, I think, has a front seven that actually could hang to a degree when it comes to that. But, that's going to be the Michigan game plan. They're going to come out. They're going to execute it. You just got to make McCarthy work. I mean, you've seen him make silly mistakes and have less than stellar games so far this season. They don't ask him to do a lot, which is why he's able to complete almost 80% of his passes, 14 touchdowns and 3 picks. You know, he's only taken 7 sacks on the year. I think we have seen him make big mistakes in big moments at Spartan Stadium specifically. So you have to rattle him and make him uncomfortable. I think if I'm worried about I'm worried about many things in this game, but if Michigan State, the biggest thing mentally I can't get over is I don't know how MSU scores. Michigan's defense is, again, they've played a bunch of bums, but they've done what you're supposed to do to bums, which is completely and totally strangle them. This game is going to fall on Caden Hauser and he's going to fall on the wide receivers. So much to ask from Hauser in his second start ever. And I don't know that they have the wideouts. Listen, if you had Keon Coleman, I'd say throw Keon the ball 400 times in this game and just see what happens. Like you said, play hero ball, do the Rocky Lombardi. But, you know, that is not an option. And I'm not sure where MSU's offense comes from. I think they could hold Michigan probably their lowest total of points this year. They've only scored 31 against Rutgers and 31 against Bowling Green. It's 30 against East Carolina in the first game. I think MSU could keep them in that range, maybe even a little lower if everything breaks right. But I just don't know how MSU's putting up those points when you can't score them against, you know, the likes of Rutgers and Iowa and some of these other teams that they've lost to recently. So it is what it is. Michigan's a very good team. If there's a path to success, it's like you said, playing hero ball, getting out there, making them uncomfortable, and putting them on the back foot. It's not going to be great. I will say this. I hope this season's already been enough of an embarrassment if you're a fan that's going to this game and is going to be drinking and all of that, not that people weren't drinking before they sold in the game, obviously, but like, just be reasonable. Like, don't do anything dumb. Don't fight people. Support your team and get out of there. Like, don't embarrass us again for like the thousandth time, because it wouldn't be shocking to see something like huge brawl breaks out of Spartan Stadium. Cool. Great. Another awesome look for the university. Like, just be normal people. John and I dislike that university as much as anybody, but just like, be chill. Like, don't fight people, please.
Yes. Let's wrap it up and say, I'll just finish with saying, like, the task is Herculean, but I think you can, there's always a chance, and it's really hard, but it's also possible. And I think, as you mentioned, there's enough talent on the team for the kids to do it. But the only way that works is if the fans actually believe it. And you have to believe in them first so they can believe in themselves. And college football is funny, man. We've watched too many games. We've seen too many. We've watched enough to know that anything can happen. And it's worth tuning in and supporting the boys. And you never know. Something incredible could happen. So let's enjoy it.
Yeah, I'm with you. All right, guys. Thanks for listening. As always, for John, it's been Austin. We'll catch you next week.
See ya.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.